Can gaming be good for your mental health? What is the future of games media, and how long can physical games survive? Find out today on a brand new Force Feedback.
Force Feedback.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to I Dream of Indie. My name's Old Gamer Joe, joined with the ex-hardcore gamer and Silent Signs for another episode of Force Feedback, the show where we tackle three hot-button topics in gaming. How's everybody doing today? We had some Thai food tonight. Everybody
very
like Thai
full.
Food? I know you don't get it too often. What'd you
no,
think?
No, I've had it before, but I had something new tonight, and I very much enjoyed
the
it.
The Pansy really U, good. Right?
Sure, yeah. That's what you say.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
And the golden
anyway.
Bags.
And golden bags, yes. I had golden bags, and they were delicious.
That one I never had before. So explain this to me. It was like a meat inside of a, it looked like it was, a crab rangoon almost to me.
It was a
no
chicken meat sack.
Yeah.
Okay? A chicken meat sack.
Yes. It was minced chicken, so it looks like a meatball, but it's chicken instead of beef. And instead of the ball being on its own, it was inside the wrap like a wonton or crab rangoon, like you said. Yeah.
Quite tasty, actually. I enjoyed it anyways.
That was good.
So yeah, that was fun, and we are together once again, which is great news, you know?
Yeah.
For how long we couldn't be in the same room together.
Love it.
So a lot of fun topics to get into. Well, maybe not so fun, all of them, but interesting, at least.
We'll have fun no matter
we'll
what.
We'll have fun. We got a lot of comments from all of you in the community section. Remember, you can head over there every Thursday. We post a poll that you can take part in, and we'll try to read as many of them as we can. There's a lot. We'll see if we can get through them all. I've got all night. I don't know about you all, but I can talk forever.
I will fall asleep eventually, so go on without me.
First topic of discussion today. Can gaming be good for mental health? We hear a lot of negativity around video games. This was big, especially I can remember ex-hardcore gamer in the 90s where the politicians were getting involved and they were trying to blame video games for violence.
I could go on and on about that.
There's a little bit of a history behind that and how this whole topic of conversation came to be, at least in the 90s.
So you're going to look at kind of anything throughout history. Whenever there's something that's going on that's bad, they always try to look for a scapegoat. You know, in the early 80s, it was, you know, Dungeons and Dragons was an evil thing that kids were playing and doing. And, you know, rock music before that. You know, it's just, it's always something. And so it just got to a point because games were becoming more realistic looking in graphics and more lifelike and more violent because they were kept pushing the boundaries of the time that, you know, the latest scapegoat was video games. And then, you know, music as well. And they started trying to meld the two together that, well, if you played Doom and listened to Marilyn Manson, then you must be a terrible person.
Well, no.
And so, I mean, like I said, I could go on and on about it, but that's kind of like the basic idea for you that are maybe a younger viewer that didn't live through that time or were younger when it happened, that it was just, it was, you know, kind of a witch hunt that we were trying to blame something on something that is not the case at all.
Silent Signs, why is this, you think, throughout history we try to blame entertainment or media for problems that maybe we otherwise don't want to talk about?
Because we don't like to address the real issue, which is mental health.
I agree with you, yes.
100%. Yeah, I mean, oftentimes, I know I, for one, I've played a lot of violent video games in my time.
And violent movies, too,
and
right?
Sure.
Horror movies.
I've seen some stuff, let me tell you.
At a young age, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the other thing, too, is people don't want to take responsibility.
Yeah.
And so if you can blame it on something or someone else,
surely
easier,
it wasn't.
Right? It's not your fault, so you can sleep at night.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind
surely
of
surely it wasn't bad parenting.
Yeah,
or anything like
definitely
that.
Not.
No.
Yeah.
The one that really sticks out to me that I remember the most was a game called Night Trap. And this was a huge controversy for whatever reason, because I guess it had to do with the fact that the women were scantily clothed and that the men were wearing these masks.
Yeah, so for you, those of you that aren't familiar with Night Trap, it was one of the early examples of a game that used what was called full motion video, which is they actually shot actors. And you're looking at video because you had the dawn of like CD-ROM technology. And so the game was made 100% to be kind of like an homage to like cheesy B movies, like horror movies. It was something that you would be able to watch on television and have no problems having any of it cut out.
Right.
But because it was a video game and the public perception at the time was still that video games are for children and that's it, that things get, you know,
Twisted a little bit. Right?
And yeah. People don't have all the facts, but they heard such and such. So the whole thing was that, oh, the women are naked and they're killed in the gory ways. They're not naked.
That's
there's
not what
no,
happens,
There's
right?
no blood. None of that stuff. And then it gets twisted even more that you're the ones killing them when the reality is that you're actually trying to save them. So, again, when you have people who don't know what they're talking about, they vilify these things that that really have no right being vilified.
And then, of course, we had a lot of the Sega games, too, like Lethal Enforcers. I remember that was another big one that was under fire. But a real big one, obviously, was Mortal Kombat.
Was that Lethal Enforcers thing? Was that a pun? It was under fire?
Unintentional, but yes. And I remember getting that game, too, and I had the blue gun. I guess that was their way of trying to not make the gun look realistic.
You know what's funny, though?
What's that?
Everybody and their mother now has enjoyed the Mortal Kombat movie. I just think it's funny. That's all.
Yeah, yeah, for real. But Lethal Enforcers, it was partially to make it look not real, but the other part of it is that the second gun was red. And that way you could tell the difference who was player one and who was player two. It was the blue side and the red side. And it was that way in the arcades as well. But that actually came far enough along that it was also on Super Nintendo completely uncut.
And yeah, it seemed to me, though, when I look back on things, that Sega didn't really cave to the pressure of the politicians, and yet Nintendo kind of did. Do you agree with that? Or
Nintendo always was of the fact, they were of the mentality, I should say, that what they were making was wholesome family fun.
Right.
That it was all about the family, everything was safe, and this and that, and they didn't want things to be, like, too violent or
bloody,
controversial
gory.
Or anything like that. Whereas Sega, their way of trying to compete with Nintendo was, you know what? Kids grow up and they outgrow video games sometimes. We want to go after their cool older brothers. We want to go after the teenagers. We want to go after the young adults. And so to be able to appeal to them, you got to do things that are a little bit more violent, just like movies, you know, whatever,
sure.
Mm-hmm. TV shows that, you know, they weren't necessarily outright saying we're going to make Mortal Kombat, because they had other games before then that kind of still pushed things. And so that was always Sega's philosophy, is that they were going to do things, they were going to skew for an older audience, and then hope that maybe their younger brother would one day want to grow up and play it as well.
I mean, there's a market for shock value, too, you know?
Of course.
Obviously, it's not shocking
Mortal Kombat
if you look at
it now.
Mortal
Kombat was popular
but...
because it was shocking.
Well,
really, right?
Even like Castlevania, the original Nintendo game, had to have its name changed because I don't remember what the actual name was if you translated it in Japanese, but it was something along the lines of Satanic Castle.
Uh-huh.
And one of the Nintendo of America employees was a born-again Christian, and he's like, look, I don't mind violence when it's cartoony, but I really have a problem if you're, like, promoting that something is satanic.
Whoops.
So can we change the name? So now this name that we know so well, so iconic, Castlevania, was actually something that came up here in America because they didn't want to call it a satanic something or other.
Interesting.
Yeah, fun little history there, huh? You can always count on X-Hardcore for that.
I feel like we need to address the elephant in the room. We did not plan this.
This is totally an accident.
So we're talking about gore and blood. Yeah. You know, we want to be
speaking
ready.
Of Satan. Yeah.
Anybody who's watching that's colorblind, yes, we are actually reading. It's not just you.
No.
We are wearing red.
It's not you, it's me.
So anyways, before we actually delve into the topic, just to continue with history here, Nintendo does eventually cave. I think Mortal Kombat is such a huge hit, they can't ignore it.
Yeah.
Everybody's mad about the Super Nintendo version, myself included. On Mortal Monday, I get home, there's sweat coming out of Johnny Cage and all this nonsense, and you're not really ripping their heads off. Your foot kind of sticks in there, no blood, no heart pull, none of the cool stuff.
No.
At least, quote, I think it's cool. But Mortal Kombat 2 comes around then. And I'm sorry, did you want to add something?
I was going to say that they changed like all of the fatalities that it...
Right.
They tried to say that, you know, the game's not based on violence, so you can still have the game and still keep it Nintendo-friendly. And the public responded accordingly.
Right. So Mortal Kombat 2 comes around, and what do you think ultimately gets Nintendo to lean into the gore, the blood, the violence, and the whole thing?
Money talks.
I mean, it's true.
When
money
you
talks.
Have,
of course.
We are now in an era when you no longer have it, where any game that's on Sega is only on Sega, any game that's on Nintendo is only on Nintendo. You're now getting it where they're on multiple platforms at the same time. So the sales figures are going to speak for themselves. When the Genesis one is far outselling the Super Nintendo one, well, what made them different? It was the violence. So they knew, like, it was loud and clear that the consumers were like, we want an uncut version. We don't want a censored version.
Well,
of
there's also
Mortal Kombat.
The thing of, like, if there's a controversy around something, sometimes that attracts even more people to
sure.
it.
Sure.
You know?
The more you're told not to do something.
Yeah, the more
you
you're told
it,
not
right?
to do something, the more you want to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah, just like cigarettes, right?
Yeah, well, they had to sell them somehow, right?
Yeah.
Sega actually was ones that were first to be able to have a rating system. They flat out, after the whole controversy with like Mortal Kombat, and even before Mortal Kombat like came to Genesis, the whole thing with Night Trap and everything, they decided, you know what, we're going to voluntarily make a rating system so that we can have our games clearly labeled that this is going to be good for everybody. This is going to be good for teenagers. This is going to be good for adults. And Nintendo had nothing of the sort because they wanted to keep it that no matter what game it is,
it's for everyone.
It's for everybody. And so when by the time the Mortal Kombat 2 comes out, you know, we have the rating systems on Genesis. Mm-hmm. On Super Nintendo, it just had like a warning on it. It just said, you know, not for anybody under 17.
Yeah, I remember that warning now, yeah.
Lethal Enforcer, same thing. Just says not for anybody under 17.
Silent Signs, I'm curious what you think then, looking back on it now. Do you think the rating system was effective at controlling certain kids from not getting certain games? Because I know I personally could still get these games if I tried hard enough.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I was watching R movies at a pretty young age, I feel like. But I was also a fairly mature kid. Like, I didn't do any, like, bad things. So I think my parents were like, all right, well, she's not, like, killing anybody, so I guess it's fine.
It's funny, too. I can remember a time where I was actually being carded for video games. I don't know if you remember this happening to you ever, but my local Funko Land at the time would card me if a game was M. And that was their way of enforcing it.
I got carded when I was, like, 27. Which I took as a compliment, so I wasn't going to get mad about it. But, yeah, no, that's one of those things that it was... It was like a location-specific thing, like a franchise, you know, whatever.
Up to the business
kind
of thing.
Yeah, right? They're going to be the ones that decide whether or not they're going to card. It's the same thing with movies. There were the movie theaters when you were younger that you knew you could go to and you could get into an R-rated movie, no problem. And the theaters that would be sticklers and, like, need a parent or guardian to be with you.
All right, so there's a lot of history lessons in there. Let's bring it back around to the main topic, though. We hear a lot of negativity around gaming and mental health, but I want to play devil's advocate today because I personally believe that games have had a good impact on my mental health. You know, I grew up with an alcoholic father, so for me, gaming was an escape from some of the negative things that were happening around me, and it was a positive thing in my life always. I've never looked at video games since I played them as a negative thing, which is why it always angered me when they were painted in that light. So I'll start with you, ex-hardcore gamer. What do you think of this whole idea that games could possibly be good and enriching and positive for people's health?
Well, I mean, I, you know, didn't have the same situation that you had, but I did grow up as my brother was much older than me. And so I was, in a way, an older child because, an only child, because he was off in college when I was still very young. So there were a lot of times that it's just me at home, you get bored. A game is a nice thing that you can play and you don't need somebody else. You're not going to play a game of Sorry with just yourself.
Sure, yeah. Like, that'd be pretty Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So, like, it was something that I could do when friends weren't around. And then when they were around, it was something we could still do together and find common ground on. Like, when you're a kid, a lot of bases on friendships, they were pretty flimsy. It didn't really matter. It was like, do you play video games? Okay, cool.
Me too.
And so, like, I can definitely see that as being a positive thing because it was an outlet. It was something you could do. You could lead to some creativity. And then I think we can go forward to as recent as this past year when we're all stuck inside with quarantine and everything like that, that I found myself playing video games like more than ever because I have all this time now.
This channel was born out of it, really, in a lot
of
ways. Yeah.
I can't go anywhere or do anything, so I need something to help spend my time on. And so I found myself finally like going back and getting to my pile of shame and trying to beat some of these games that I've said for years that I was going to play or going to finish. And I had a lot of fun with it, and it really prevented me from like thinking about all the doom and gloom that was going on around me. And actually got me playing games with my wife, who's not a big video game player. It got us playing, doing something together that we don't normally do. It was like a different experience for us.
Silent Signs, you are not a psychologist, but you do have a psychology major. What do you think of this whole argument of games being good for your mental health versus negative?
I think that's entirely plausible. Obviously, it depends on the person. There's, you know, I'm sure there's people out there who have a gaming addiction, and for them, maybe gaming isn't good for their mental health. But I'd say for the average person, you can make connections, real world connections with people.
More than ever, right?
You can escape, you know, a bad situation like maybe you did. I don't know. You can bond with people over it. I don't see a downside. And now there's so many games that embrace the topic of mental health and can make you feel seen and recognized and heard as an individual as well. So
sure. No, I'm with you 100% there.
Yeah.
Like anything, it comes down to moderation, you
absolutely
know, and keeping things in good doses where you're definitely not becoming, yes, I played a lot more video games than I did, but I still did other things. Well, I still tried to, like, you know. But
also,
it's just,
you know, extenuating circumstances.
Yes.
But on the flip side of that, ex-hardcore gamer, can these games bring out violent behavior in certain people? I know you're not a psychologist either, but do you think these can have a negative effect where you all of a sudden want to do something horrible and, you know, just unthinkable, and is that the game's fault?
So I think that what can happen is that you're going to have instances where people, you know, especially when they're younger, might not be able to tell the difference between fantasy and reality, but that's not the game's fault.
Yeah. Right.
That's there's other things that are underlying there.
Because generally society does a pretty good job of separating the two.
Yeah.
Right?
And so like what's going to happen is, again, you want to think about like your parents. You know, you're going to have those parents that are strict, and you're going to have the parents that aren't, and you're going to hope that the parents are going to know what's best for that child. Mm. So what I was able to watch and play and listen to maybe wouldn't have been okay enough for somebody else, because even just something as simple as, well, this kid was watching this horror movie that I watched, and now they're having nightmares every night. If you're not getting a good sleep, that's going to lead to issues. So, you know, everybody reacts to things differently. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess it's within the realm of possibility that somebody could get some ideas from watching something or, you know, whatever the case may be. But the bottom line is that sometimes there's, if it's not one thing that's going to be the trigger, it might be something else.
So let's bring some of our fans into the conversation here. We have a lot of comments from different folks. We have Peach here, who says, initially, games were good for my mental health. I moved a lot as a kid, so games were a good way to keep me busy. I went through a phase where I would compare myself to my friends a lot, which usually had a negative impact on my mental health. Once I stopped doing that, gaming started having a positive impact on my mental health. Now it's the main tool I use to help with stress and anxiety. What say you to that?
I think that that's great. You know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about being like a, you know, an only child, where you have that game as like an outlet when you don't have a lot of people around you. And then just the fact that it's a way to help with stress. You know, I've definitely done that, where it's like, I've had a rough day at work. Mm-hmm. I just want to get home, relax on the couch, and play some video games. Maybe it's a violent game, but maybe it's not. You know, sometimes you're going to play a game of Tetris. There's nothing violent about that whatsoever. And it's just a way that I can kind of just get through and just kind of relax, start forgetting about the bad parts of the days, and kind of get to a point where I can just get ready to get some sleep for the next day.
And what do you think too, Silent Signs? I'm curious about this. The idea of when we see something grotesque in a video game or just really violent and over the top, that brings us joy and entertainment. What is there a savage part inside of people that just brings this out of us?
It's just something so outlandish and
unrealistic, right?
Unrealistic, yeah. That it's fun. It's the same reason we like big explosions in an action movie. I don't want to see one in real life ever.
No,
but if I see it on film, I have that ability to separate real and fiction, you know? So
you more or less agree with that?
I know that I can have a very twisted sense of humor, where things that really, if it was a real life situation, would not make me laugh the way it does when I'm watching it in a movie. I remember going to see like one of the Final Destination sequels, and I was laughing so hard at the movie that, like, unfortunately, if anybody in that theater was watching it with me, I do apologize if I was ruining the experience for you. I think they were actually like mortified by the things that were going on, and I thought it was hilarious. So,
I can't drive behind one of those trucks with logs in it to
this
day.
God, no, definitely not.
You can show me almost anything in a game or movie and it won't shock me at all, but when I see some kind of gore in real life, I'm just a wimp about it.
Of
I
course.
I can't look at it.
Because it's a totally different situation. Right. Again, it's that separation of fantasy and reality. So once it's reality, it hits so much different than when it's not.
Yeah.
Let's bring Adriana Amato into the conversation here, who says, games have always given me such joy. I couldn't live without my games, especially during the pandemic. Games have given me a way to keep my sanity and has given me an escape that we all need when we can't go anywhere.
Definitely.
Yeah. Sounds
Same
like
here.
It rings like basically what I was saying earlier.
I think a lot of people felt that way throughout the last year, especially.
For sure.
You know, and again, this channel really started through the pandemic. I was laid off, unfortunately, but I tried to make a negative thing into a positive thing, and that's why we have this great community now, and we're able to have discussions like this. So you always got to take the good with the bad in life, right?
Yeah, sometimes you got to make the best out of a bad situation.
For sure.
Skepticism says, gaming has helped me to get through really difficult, traumatic times. They have brought me a lot of peace, beauty, and just periods to disconnect from the negative parts of the world.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. You know, I love how we're getting the comments, because you know, the more that we can get other people's opinions, it's like, when we do this stuff, it's like, what we say is just our opinion, so it's great to get other perspectives and stuff, too. So thank you.
Let's hear from Wesley William Semple, who says, I love being able to escape from my everyday mental health fun. I play hours of Rocket League a day, and my mind is at ease and in the game. In between sessions, I play indie games, mainly roguelike and such. Funny how different games connect with different people, too. Some experiences for me can be really frustrating, but for another person, it can be enjoyable and cathartic almost.
Sure. Yeah,
so. I played a lot of Rocket League over quarantine as well, so I could definitely relate. It was one of many games that I played a lot of, but I definitely played a lot of it, like, more than ever. Like, I got the game when it first came out because it was, like, a PlayStation 4. Like,
yeah, it was a Plus game for free.
Yeah. Yep. And so I played it, like, a little bit when it came out, and then I moved on, and then, like, you know, all this time goes by, and all of a sudden I'm just, like, hooked all over again.
Flower Angel Rave says, I feel like games have had a positive effect on my mental health rather than a negative one. I didn't really have friends as a child teen, and I think they have helped during some of the harder times I had due to bullying and the anxiety and depression I developed in my late teen years. While I'm still pretty much a shut-in as an adult working on it, with the world circumstances not making that easy, I think games still help me, especially if I'm looking for an upcoming game, and finding like-minded people online has also helped. Then again, I guess that can apply to most hobbies, and finding people to share them with really. I think this is an interesting conversation too, Silent Signs, with the whole idea of the internet changing the world as drastically as it has. Do you think that's had a negative or positive effect too? Sort of along the same lines of the
conversation. The internet. That's a whole other animal, my friend.
Here's the can of worms being opened.
How much time do we have?
Well, for Flower Angel Rave here, it's had a positive effect. Meeting people, you know, being a shut-in and being able to communicate with people.
The internet is the best, worst thing that has ever happened to us. I honestly believe that.
Yeah.
I can definitely fully agree to that because I've been on the internet since, you know, I was a teenager, you know, in the early 90s when it was a very, very primitive version of what we have now. And I could meet up with, like you say, like-minded people. And it's allowed me to learn about things that I wouldn't have been able to even know exist before, whether it be like obscure movies or games or whatever the case may be, music. And I've continued that as the years go on. But also as the more people that get on it, then there's the other treacherous waters that you have to navigate. But that's part of life, that there are good and bad that come with everything. And I think that we can even really directly tie it into, like, cheap plug, the Discord that we have.
Sure.
That
feels like a little therapeutic to me at times.
That you know, you have this, like, community of like-minded people that are a part of this. I myself was really hesitant to even join it because I just know how the internet can be.
Oh, sure. And especially a free open forum.
Yeah. So I was really, really hesitant to join, and I joined a lot later. And once I did, like, everybody for the most part has been, like, really cool, and we've just been able to have, like, good conversations every day about stuff that even doesn't have to do with gaming. And that's where I think, again, it's a really cool thing to have gaming in our lives, because it may be one aspect of our lives, but it's not the only thing, but it can be a connective tissue for us, that it's what gets us initially talking, but it can spawn off into all these other conversations.
Mm-hmm. Silent Signs, why do you think the term, for a lot of folks, they've told me personally, the term gamer, they almost don't even want to associate it. I think that's a really sad thing to hear, but why do you think this negativity around that term even exists now?
I wouldn't call myself a gamer for a long time.
No.
No. And I, you know, I went into my high school. We were talking about this earlier. I was a sophomore when I first started at the high school that I ended up graduating from. I didn't know anybody, and I feel like there was a lot of judgment around gamers then, especially a female gamer. I know.
Girl.
I know. Crazy, right? Like, I don't know.
It's so different for me because they were so accepted, and, you know, my small group of friends, it was cool to talk about video games and strategies and magazines.
So I ended up actually bonding with people over playing, as silly as it is, a Guitar Hero and Rock Band, and that's how I made some of my best friends in high school. So
suddenly you weren't ashamed to be called a gamer.
Yeah. Well,
it was cool to be.
Even then, I still probably wouldn't have called myself one if we were, like, walking down the hallway in school, you know? But now I'm obviously more comfortable with it.
As relates to current times, though, ex-hardcore gamer, why do you think there is a negative connotation around?
It's anything. You know, if you are a nerd, you're a geek, you're a gamer, you're a metalhead, you can put whatever label you want to put on it. There's a lot of times when these come with negative connotations because you have other people who are outside of that group that look down upon them or think negatively upon them in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
you know, you have all of these conventions that exist for various interests that people can go to and find like-minded people. But for the people who aren't interested in those things, they're like, wow, what a loser that they want to love something so much that they're going to go to a thing just about that. When they will do the same thing that, you know, hey, you're going to meet up at the football game and you're going to all go and tailgate at the party beforehand. Like, I've found myself at times, I'll fully admit, that you'd be like, I'd be at Comic-Con and be like, I know I'm a nerd, but I'm not that much of a nerd. Like, yeah. You know, you kind of, we all have these like preconceived notions and prejudices as much as we don't want to or think that we have them. And the only thing that you can do is just try to kind of keep yourself in check and just try to remember that they just love something as much as you do and they have a different way of showing it.
And you know, the funny thing is, I would have never judged anyone else for calling themselves a gamer or a nerd, but for me, I was like, oh no, I could never, you know?
Yeah.
But then I'm like, why am I being so harsh on myself when I would never be that mean to anyone else?
I remember like not reading comic books anymore after a certain point because I was like, oh, I gotta stop reading comic books. I actually think I talked about this on the last episode of this, the first one we did, where I was talking about, like, oh, I'm not going to watch Power Rangers. Like, that's like something for kids. Like, I'm too old for that. Like, I was trying to be cooler because even though it would have been something I probably would have loved, but because of this, like, you know, the social stigmas that you're worried about when you're navigating high school life, that you kind of try to change what you would do or think just because of nonsense, really.
On to topic number two. That first one went a while there, but it's an interesting and complex subject.
Yeah, there's a lot to it.
There is a lot to it. We could have talked for probably another hour about it.
But at least.
So, topic number two. Future of games media. This is an interesting one to me because as a content creator now, I find myself in a situation where, well, I guess I started in video because I thought that was the future, and I still do believe that.
Well, technically, you started in a podcast.
This is true, yeah, but, you know, when I really started getting serious about things. And yeah, I do think that video is kind of the future, or at least it's the present right now as far as popularity, because it does feel, to me anyways, that these mainstream sites, they're, I don't want to say they're dying because obviously people still go to IGN and these sites, I think they are clawing at ways to stay relevant. And what do you think here, ex-hardcore gamer? Is it a struggle for these media websites today, or are they doing just fine, or is video taking over?
I think that they're doing just fine because you're going to look at a situation where this is not just games media, it's all media. Mm-hmm. Games have become such a part of popular culture that when you're like a gamer and you're going to IGN and you're upset that there's like a movie review on there or a TV show review, that's because games have become just as synonymous with entertainment as those things. So they're expanding to include those things, just like back in the day when you'd read an Entertainment Weekly and it's talking about a movie or an album, or, you know, it's not focusing on just one medium. And so they're doing just fine. They're making plenty of money, but they're also doing video. They're also doing podcasts. They're doing Discord servers. There's so many different ways to reach out to people. Mm. Some people still just want to read things on Twitter. And it's like they're not even reading the article. They're just reading the tweet about it. And then they're going to reply and talk to people that way. There's so many different ways to reach out to people. And there's not one way that's any better or worse than another in the grand scheme of things. It's just different ways of consuming the content.
Yeah, I think that is kind of the key to survival here, doing more than one thing for these websites. Because if you're just a website with written reviews, I don't know if that has so much a place anymore. But if you have written reviews and then you have video to go along with those, or you have other forms of media across different, like you were saying, you know, Discord and all these different branches, do you think that's the way to go for games in the future? Can these websites still continue to exist? Or will everything go video?
So, I mean, I think they certainly will have a place if they continue to evolve as the rest of the internet does. But I think the most successful type of, you know, review media sources are the ones that are interactive. So on a YouTube video, you have the comment section, usually, unless somebody turns the comments off. But then, you know, you could hear from other people and hear their perspectives, and maybe they'll have a different take on it. Maybe they'll be more relatable to you than even the content of the video itself, you know? So having that interaction is sometimes more important than the actual review itself.
I think the fear for a lot of people, too, is that with YouTube, you get a lot of people doing the same things, and it's just hard to pick and choose what creator you really like. You see the same titles from people, the clickbait, the tricks, that kind of thing. Does that give a negative opinion on YouTube, you think, in general, or other video formats?
Again, it goes with anything. It's not just, you know, for games. You know, you're going to go to a new site, and then all of a sudden it has a headline that's trying to get you to click on it, and it has nothing to do with anything that, when you're actually reading the article, it was very misleading. And, you know, I'm the type of person that I sometimes will actually still prefer when something is in the written form versus audio or video, because I'll be, like, it's late at night, and I don't want to, like, wake up my wife or something like that and, like, have, like, a blaring TV. I just want to sit and read a little bit. When I'm reading, it helps me relax more. It helps me go to sleep. So you need to have, like, these different things. But, yeah, you have to learn to navigate that, like, This title seems a little fishy. I don't think this is necessarily what it's about. And so you can learn that. But I find that, at least me personally, I'll be like, you know what? This site, way too much clickbait. This channel on YouTube, way too much of, like, and you can block them. And, you know, you follow the ones that you like more versus the ones that you don't. And you can try to kind of narrow it down. But still not, you don't want to do it too much, because then you start getting into that echo chamber that we always talk about. That. Yeah. You want to try to at least keep it a little bit broad, but at the same time, you don't want to be, like, duped into, like, nonsense and scrolling through endless ads to, like, you know, here's the title that talks about something, and you have to read four paragraphs before it actually gets to what the title was about.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of frustration with games media. I think people are sick of what they're getting exactly. They're tired of, you know, a lot of these videos, not to, like, call anyone out or anything, but they do follow a basic format, and you get the number at the end, and the number kind of becomes the discussion more than the discussion that the creator was having himself or herself. So, Silent Signs, do you feel like gamers are frustrated with the coverage they're getting?
I think that's going to depend on the gamer entirely. Some people just want a number, and they're like, okay, this game's a 6. Like, great, okay. Maybe that's what works for you. It's, you know, not what I prefer necessarily. And I think that's, you know, a game is subjective because there's so many components to it.
There's so much to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Like, so for it to boil down to a number.
Yeah, maybe the story's a 6, but maybe the graphics are a 10, and maybe the soundtrack's, like, banging, and I want to listen to it. I've seen
videos where it's like an algorithm at the end, and this guy's saying, you know, sound 9.5, and he's dividing things, and it's adding and subtracting,
and that's great.
It's just getting...
There's some people who are very mathematical-minded, and maybe that's what works for them, and that's what comprehend.
And at some point, you know, I just want to hear about the game. I think that's why we've had some success. We just straight up talk about the game, you know, but we're a niche channel ourselves, so
hey,
who knows?
My reviews are not scientific in any way.
Exactly.
I think that people, you know, like she says, that people are all looking for different things, so there's going to be different sources for every person, and that's okay, because like you say, we're in this little pocket of the internet.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's okay, because we're going to have our little pocket that are going to hopefully enjoy with what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then the other people who aren't going to enjoy it, that's fine. Let them enjoy something else. Like, we can't knock them for that.
I love pockets.
Pockets.
Yes.
Being a niche is not a bad thing, right? Not at all.
Not at all. Everybody has their niche in life, you know?
We're in the cargo pants of the internet.
Yeah.
Silent Signs, I'm a little blind, but these glasses were driving me crazy sliding down my face. So I'm going to have you read some of the comments here on this topic.
Gladly. Yeah.
Go ahead and kick it off. Whatever you wish. We had a bunch of them.
We have one from... let's see. Let's pick and choose somebody we haven't heard from yet. White Knight. YouTube has such a huge reach, and probably every game dev has a channel on it. Even Team Cherry, though, you'd never know. As well as just about every video game media channel. YouTube isn't amazing, especially with its weird policing of political and social views on its platform whilst claiming to promote free speech, but it's so easily accessible, and for me, at least, the app is easy to use. I'm happy to use it for my gaming coverage. Yeah, I agree.
What do you think of this whole idea of policing political views, and...
Well, whoa. I mean...
Opening up another can,
yeah,
aren't
we? Yeah, I don't know if we want to keep opening up these worms, but I think that, you know, that can be a discussion for another time, but when it comes to, like...
As it relates to games.
Yeah, so I was going to say, when it comes to gaming coverage, you know, I don't think you're really going to see a whole lot of, you know, censorship or whatever you want to call it. What I see is something that's a little bit more of the issue with YouTube is, and I see this with other things non-gaming related, is so a new game trailer comes out, let's say.
Sure.
Now my channel is flooded with, or my feed is flooded with, you know, here's GameSpot's having the trailer hosted. Here's IGN's having the trailer hosted. Here's Game Trailer's channel having it. And so you start seeing the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And unless you watch and like each one of those, it's going to keep like recommending it to you or something. And obviously you can hit the button that says like, not interested, already watched it. Like there's all these things that you can do, but it becomes more work.
At some point you can't escape it, right?
Yeah. It's and just it's just like, so you're just kind of flooded with a lot of the same literally the same exact content. And so, you know, there is pros and cons to things being open and free is basically what I'm getting at, is that by having all this free speech, you're going to start seeing a lot of the same stuff over and over again. You're going to see stuff that you agree with. You're going to see stuff you don't agree with. It's all part of like learning how to navigate through life. Is that's just another function, is you have to learn to navigate through YouTube.
Signs, is there no greater conspiracy here? Is it simply a matter of, like ex-hardcore gamers here says, just navigating through it?
Conspiracy. Oof.
He's trying to get all the buzzwords and the tags on the video.
Button topics, man.
Gotta get those tags in there.
I don't know. I don't have that problem, but I don't subscribe to a lot of those big channels.
I don't either, but because I've watched this trailer so many times or whatever, yeah. You know what I mean? Like this kind of content, it keeps recommending it to me. And I probably should say, like, I don't show me from this channel, but at the same time I feel like, well,
but then what if something else comes out that you do want
to
see?
And it happens to me with like movie trailers too. Yeah. Like, okay, so here's the one that's officially from Paramount Studios. I don't need all these like other rando
right
trailer channels to also show me the same trailer.
See, that's funny because my YouTube experience is very different from yours.
What the heck is mine then? I'm getting recommended all these ex-porn stars on Twitch lately in my video feed. What the heck have I been searching?
Do we want to know? I don't know. I tend to hop right over to my like subscriptions on YouTube. So I only really see the videos from the people who I intentionally elected to see videos
It can
from.
Be a little weird how the algorithm works though, how huh? Certain videos come out above others. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this weird situation where we don't know where our video is going to end up when we post
it. I like
it
my world to be pretty well curated. You know, yeah. I find voices that I enjoy hearing from and I stick to those, and occasionally I'll branch out.
But also, you know, to be fair to YouTube, yeah. This is almost an impossible task, isn't it? Because there's so much content being uploaded. You can't expect them to be able to filter everything.
It's the same thing with like if you're on Twitter. Like if you follow more than a handful of people, mm-hmm. you're dealing with scrolling through all kinds of stuff.
I don't even like to look at the Twitter. Any more comments here, Silent Sons?
The internet, man. Whew.
What's the bottom one there? I misread it and I thought it was somebody I knew. Matt Huck there. I knew a Matt Hack, so I thought that's what it said.
All right.
But it's not. So let's
wish I could help you, but I can't read
scroll
right now.
Scroll down. Come on, man. We just gotta scroll a little.
Alright, I'll get you.
Because it's a little off the screen there. There we go.
There you go.
Did you want me to read it or do you want to read it?
Oh, be my guest. All right. I can't see.
So Matt Huck. Not the person I know. I get most of my gaming news and reviews from smaller YouTubers, and I also read a few sites' articles. I'm not much into AAA gaming or stereotypical gaming culture, so I stay away from a lot of it, honestly. Small channels like yours are the best. The ones with millions of subs are obnoxious and make me weep for the future of gaming and humankind in general. Alrighty, so
yeah,
like,
that's good for us.
Yeah,
well,
I'm glad that he appreciates what you guys are doing, and myself in a much smaller capacity. So thank you.
I think there is this space for channels like ours, and we have a positive message. I think, and that brings positive people along with it. I think, but yeah, it is challenging to find something in this niche, isn't it? But I think when we were starting out, a lot of the reason we started this channel was because not a lot of other people were doing it. We were filling a need, not only that we love indie games, but that there just weren't a lot of people talking about these games. So it's great to hear that so many have connected with that message.
Yeah, I think there's space for everyone on the internet. I mean, that's one of the good things about it, is that there is space for these huge companies, and there's an audience for them, obviously, because they became huge for a reason. And there's space for little folks like us that just want to share our love of indie games, you know?
Honestly,
that's the beautiful thing.
I'm super thankful that we are in our own space, kind of away from all the noise and all the toxicity out there, and we can just kind of have this nice place. Not to say that someone crappy's gonna not show up, but it's gonna happen at some point. But
you know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with liking you know, big company's take on things either, you know?
That's completely up to the individual.
Yeah,
you know?
There's nothing shameful about liking something that's mainstream or popular.
There's going to be people that don't like us or don't like our message, too.
Oh,
you
I'm
know?
Sure there's many there people, people that don't like me.
We've definitely seen the results of that. So,
you know, that's just the way it goes. But I like where we are. I like this small space. I never really had a goal of getting even to where we are right now, to be honest, but I don't really like the idea of being this 100,000, 300,000
I'll never
channel.
Forget, I was with one of my best friends when we got 200 subscribers, and I was like, I can't believe we have 200 subscribers on YouTube.
All right, it's on to the last topic for the day. Parting is such sweet sorrow, but it is an interesting one. In fact, I kind of got this idea from the Discord. They've been submitting some ideas over in the new Force Feedback section there, and that's always nice because my brain doesn't always work like it should. So, how long can physical games survive? Silent Signs, let's start with you. This is a cool topic because I know a lot of people that still love physical games. They only buy physical games to this day. And there's some interesting reasons why. I think this even surprised you a bit when we were learning more about certain members in the Discord, why they had these physical games and they hadn't changed to digital. So, what do you think here? What is the odds of physical games surviving much longer?
I think they're going to survive because, first of all, nostalgia is a thing. And second of all, like we talked about on the last Force Feedback, trends come and go and things will go out of fashion and they'll come right back into fashion because I have a record collection and I was not born when records were a thing.
But to that point, have physical games ever gone out of fashion, per se?
I mean, they were cartridges and then they became CDs and now they're becoming digital, but you know, music became records, became tapes, became 8-track, you know, became CDs and then digital. But guess what? People still collect freaking cassette tapes. They sell those now for new music because it's a cool and trendy thing. So I think there will always be a market for it. It might be the nostalgia market.
Yeah, I think it kind of depends, too, on the survival of consoles because really these physical games, PC forever, right, has not been physical. I mean, you can probably remember we're pretty old, right? But
yeah, I mean, yes, like Steam really changed the landscape there, and it's been like a pretty much the way to get games was to become digital. Well over like 15 years.
How long
now
on PC really since it's been the shift from?
Like I said, like, yeah, it's been like at least 15 years.
15
since,
years, yeah.
Since you would, you know, you can still go to a store now, like a Target or a GameStop, and they have that PC section that's got like 6 games to pick
from. It's like Sims, Civilizations.
Yeah. They have like these like ones that are like really, really like going.
It's a weird, sad thing to see, isn't it?
And like Best Buy would have it where you would have some, and then you'd buy the box, you'd open it up, and it's just a code to download it anyway. So like,
that's always such a kick.
It's really like been very different on PC for a long time now because the convenience of being able to just go digital and you could buy a computer now and it doesn't even have a DVD or Blu-ray drive in it.
Yep.
So because you don't need it because of, you know, various reasons. So it's definitely been a while. Yeah.
Is this appealing to you at all, Silent Signs, this idea of getting essentially a plastic case, no instruction booklet whatsoever, and just a code inside? Does that do anything for you?
It makes me a little sad, to be honest. I mean,
it's just kind of a shell of what was.
You have something to put on your shelf if you enjoy displaying things, but also it's like, oh, it's just kind of empty.
And then you're just kind of looking at it and
I don't know. See, the thing about digital that always makes me nervous is that you don't have something physical to hold on to. And let's say
we saw this recently, right?
Let's
Sony.
Say the whole system crashes, you know, Sony's infrastructure collapsed. I don't know. It's probably not going to happen.
I mean, if anything, this has shown that Sony will do this at some point, right? These stores will eventually
but,
shut down.
But, you know, you've been through the experience of losing an email account and how catastrophic that was for you. Just imagine if you lost every game in your library and you weren't able to get it back, you know?
Well, that's, I think, it's another interesting topic, but I think history is so important. And in a way, I don't condone piracy, but I like the idea of these old games that are lost to time continuing to exist on the PC in the form of a ROM or something like that. Because when are you ever going to be able to play Ren and Stimpy or something like that again? You know, these games that can't come back.
But at the same time, you could still own your Genesis in that cartridge.
You can, yes. But eventually, I just feel like we're going to hit a point in time where these carts are just gone. They're lost to time, just like arcade cabinets. Now, most of the arcade cabinets are probably in people's houses right now at this point, right? You're not going to just find them in the wild, and eventually just things go away. So,
and they break down.
So the idea of being able to preserve them forever on computers, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think piracy sucks, obviously, and I try to pay for everything when I can as far as supporting developers and publishers. But this idea of preserving history, I do think that's important. And I do see why people hold on to physical things, because that has special meaning, those memories and nostalgia, right?
Yeah, and there's like a collector's mentality too. Like, I just saw a most recent example of Mega Man The Wily Wars on Sega Genesis never came out physically in North America. It was a exclusive for the Sega Channel. Came out physically in Japan and I believe Europe as well. So there's actually now like a run that's coming out of a physical cartridge that's like a full collector's edition with posters and stuff, so that you have an actual cartridge that you can buy of Mega Man The Wily Wars that will play in a US Genesis. So we're talking still selling a cartridge for a system that hasn't been made in decades.
Yeah, this is cool too.
That's like something that still exists. We're not talking like, oh, we're making The Wily Wars as like a thing that you can buy for your PlayStation 5. Yeah. It's like, no, this is literally still for your Genesis.
We've seen it, too, on the channel. Sounds Intrepid Izzy with the Dreamcast.
That's
getting a physical Dreamcast.
New
release,
games being
kind of
made
thing.
For the Vita, even. I know they weren't physical, but
I think that's really neat. I think that's special in a lot of ways. It's not something I'm going to do. I just am at a point in my life where I can't hold on to all these old consoles anymore, and I have limited space, unfortunately. I think the idea of it is cool, though. How about you?
I do, and I think that, like, you, and one thing I was reading about recently was the Polymega, retro console that they have kind of this like cool unique aspect to it where you can buy different modules that will allow you to play different consoles, so you don't necessarily have to worry about keeping an old console up and running. You can have some newer hardware and you can still have the benefits of having like digital, where if you put the cartridge in or put the CD in, it's going to rip it to the hard drive or internal memory.
It's pretty rad.
So you can boot it off of a list.
Yeah, you were showing me this.
But that's at the same time, like, you can't take that hard drive out and put it in your computer. Like, it truly has to be something that you rip. So you can, it's a way that they can avoid it being a piracy machine, that you're still doing things in a very legitimate way that still helps out people in various ways. And I think that's a really cool thing. Like, I wish it wasn't so expensive.
Yeah.
But at least there are options out there for people who truly care about something like that.
Silent Signs, what do you think? This whole idea of, I guess my question more is, why do you think these physical products mean so much to people? Is it nostalgia? Is it something else? Is it memories?
Yeah, I mean, for me, if we're talking about an older game, if I go in there and pick up my Super Nintendo and my Donkey Kong Country cartridge I've had since I was a very young kid,
this will bring you back.
It's going to make me smile. It's going to bring me back to a happier time. But even getting a new game, I don't know, there's some sense of joy of holding a physical thing.
Do you get that same sense of joy? Or you've been digital for a while?
Kind of, yeah. I've been digital for so long that I really don't feel it. And I guess the closest that I can say that my world is physical is that there's still so many things in the movie world that you can't get on streaming and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll still buy a physical version of that. But then I end up doing kind of like a Polymega type thing. I still put it all on my computer and launch from a list of movies so that it can kind of have a Netflix type situation, but it's for my own personal collection.
Yeah.
So I have these like cool like Blu-rays of these obscure horror movies with a nice beautiful like hand-drawn, like hand-painted like slipcover, and like there's cool stuff, but it really isn't something that I like go back to a lot, the physical part of it. I just continue to have it on that digital world. Well, but then I have that backup, so if something does happen, I can just re-rip it to my
computer. So I think that's another thing that you're touching on there is
availability.
Availability, but also having a physical copy of something sometimes also helps support the creator and the artist, because a lot of times they're selling those for, you know, another way to make revenue.
Yep.
Like, just to give an example, it's not a game, but music. I have obviously access to Spotify Unlimited and I can listen to whatever album I want. But you best believe if I really love an album, I'm going to buy a physical copy of it and support the artist that way.
I think there is something a little bit empty about the instant gratification of buying something digitally. It's like, all right, it's out now. I'm going to click a button and here it is. Yet you're not going through that process that, at least when I was growing up, begging your parents to take you to the store, and then going to the store, and then looking through the glass and picking one.
Both have
and
their,
not knowing exactly what you're getting.
They both have their value, and for different reasons. There's the instant gratification, which is great, but then there's also kind of the anticipation of waiting for something to arrive, which is also kind of great.
And kind of exciting when you see the Amazon box, right, and everything like that.
Mine don't usually come from Amazon, but...
Yeah. But I think it is important that these physical games do live on for the people that care about them, and they're the ones that will keep them alive anyways. So it's hard to think about a world without them, but I could see it in the future. How about you?
I think it's going to become a niche thing, but it's going to always exist.
Because, kind of is now almost, right? With limited run games and companies like that.
I mean, you know, you're kind of touching upon like people wanting to have older games, and that's their way of having physical. But I can still see, like, even going forward... Like, you're still going to have it where, you know what, there's that person that still wants, you know, the latest Call of Duty on a disc because they want to be able to easily, you know what, we have data caps a lot of times in the United States and other countries as well. You have people, we have people that are in our Discord that talk about where they live, the internet is garbage, and so it's too slow. So you're waiting way too long, whereas especially on something like the Switch where you're not even having to worry about installing anything, you just put that cartridge in and it just starts playing. There's something to be said about that when you can just, boom, just get right to playing and not have to wait for an install, not having to wait for an update, not have, you know, it's like you just go and you do it. And so there's always going to be instances, no matter how good things get, because even if like games become more streaming based, you know, like with Stadia and stuff like that, just like how music did, you know what? People still want that physical thing. They want to be able to do it for whatever reason,
put it on their shelf and display it, you know?
So people are still like, all games could be streaming in the future, but you know what, somebody's still going to want that physical copy because my internet's not reliable enough, and so I want to, even though the streaming is great, it doesn't look as good as when I play the physical copy, you know, something like that.
At the end of the day, I think it's the content that's on that disc or whatever, that's really the important part that sticks with you, you know? I don't remember Donkey Kong Country for the box so much as I remember it for being a great game.
Well, the Super Nintendo boxes did disintegrate if you breathe on them.
Exactly, so. Right.
Another reason I was a Genesis kid.
I think we can all agree it's the game inside that's the real important part.
Yeah, so
here,
I guess it begs the question, too, of, like, these kids that are growing up with everything being instantly available when they had streaming and downloads, like... They're not going to have the nostalgia for getting that physical copy of something. Are they going to care about something physical down the road?
Do you have any nostalgia for the GameStop Midnight launches?
No, because I never did them.
I think we can all say we don't miss those.
I literally did the launch of a system only one time, and it was with you. And I only did it because you asked me to. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. I'm like, I'll wait. Like,
yeah,
I
wait a minute. Same here. What the heck?
I think consoles and physical games, it's an entirely different thing, though. It is exciting to go to a store and get a brand new console, which, sadly, we were denied that this past go-around.
No, I really liked going on Amazon, clicking the one click, and then it was delivered at my door the day that it came out. That was much nicer than...
Fighting a crowd of people.
Yeah. Even though I was eating White Hut at the time, that was pretty awesome.
Well, that's always good. If you don't know, that's a delicious local burger chain around here.
Not around here. It was in New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We have a local White Hut.
No. Burger place. Oh, you know what? Not White Hut. White Castle.
Oh, White Castle.
That's
why.
I was going to say White Hut.
I said the local one, and I meant
White Castle.
We got there eventually.
Yeah.
I've only had White Castle once, and that was in Ohio, and I liked it, actually. It was good.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other topic.
And that's neither here nor there.
What do you think, everybody, about all three topics we discussed today? Let us know in the comment section below. That's going to do it for Force Feedback for this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more great topics of discussion. Head on over to the Discord. Drop your ideas in the comments however you want. Do you have something you want us to discuss? We'll get into it next time on Force Feedback.
Thank you so much for watching the latest video from I Dream of Indie. We'd now like to take a moment to thank our great indie warriors, Mitchell Hall, Kevalo, Bunny, Bill Tikas, Christian Cruz, Strict9, Rosie Syntex, Chris Jackson, Nathan Moore, Peach, Adriana Amato, CJR, Jesse, Falco Lombardi, C-Coil, and Skepticism. Thank you for all you do for independent games, developers, publishers, and for I Dream of Indie. Help us bring a voice to the voiceless by heading down to the description box below or head on over to idreamofindie.com and let's stop that echo chamber.